Jessica.
And this is episode 135 of the Double Knit Podcast.
Good afternoon.
It is afternoon.
It is. It's totally a different yeah. little thing for us to
hopefully
get together.
Hopefully I will
yawn
less.
Yes.
That would be good. We'll see.
We don't have any announcements. We're just jumping right into it while we're working. Okay.
Go for it.
I will go for it. I knit hats. I knit the Picheline hat, which is by Jocelyn Tunney from Owl, but I did it in an ancient skein of yarn in my stash. It was from, it's so long ago. I was in a hand-dyed sock yarn swap for beginning dyers called Diorama, probably like 15 years ago.
Holy crap.
And I don't and the skeins I got were Knit Picks, like, original sock yarn, which is a very, like, fluffy, not great sock yarn. And it was done in very, like, Easter, like, the person, I think, literally used Easter egg dyes to dye. So
pastel.
These very pastel-y colors, very not me colors.
Yeah, that's not you.
So years ago, I over-dyed it to sort of a bluey, purpley something, a lot more me. But then I never really used it because I wasn't that inspired by the yarn. So I decided to do a chain ply with it as I knit with it so that I was actually knitting with it tripled up.
Mm-hmm.
And because the hat's written for a bulky yarn. So it's just got a simple little spiral pattern to it.
Sorry, it's like summer. And I have the windows closed, but since it's afternoon, traffic is much louder. It's a Best Buy or something. So there might be more background noise than usual.
More motorcycles going by.
Yeah. Children, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yep.
Anyway, so that was a bulky hat. Then I did a couple of scrap hats, like some helixes, some simple hats. I knit Volkig, which is Martina Beam, which I think I was working on the last time we talked.
Yeah.
So finished that up. Such a clever pattern, one line pattern, that makes this really interesting fabric. And it, like, every time I'd work on it, everyone was always like so intrigued, like, what is that? That looks really involved. And it's like, no, it's so simple.
Mm-hmm.
So still big fan of that. I knit the Kindling mitts, which are from Helen Stewart.
I did those
in a little scrap skein. Yeah. Just a really simple little cable pattern mitt. We just did for our cowl knit along, we did Till the Cowls Come Home, which is from Lyrical Knits. It's a scrappy fingering white cowl done in, like, basically, how would you describe how it's knit? You start with a triangle, like you're knitting, as if you were knitting a triangle shawl. So you start with a garter tab.
Mm-hmm.
Knit the triangle out, then at some point you join it up and you're knitting, it's a stripey pattern, so you're just doing in four colors, doing this whole stripey thing, and then at some point you stop, and then you start just knitting back and forth to fill in, so, because what you end up with is a tube that comes to a point on one side, so then you end up knitting back and forth to sort of fill in the triangle on the other end. So, good stash buster. Came out really cute. I started knitting Olivia mitts, and I can't remember who the pattern was by, but I knit one mitt, and now this is my problem with trying to use scrap balls of yarn to knit mitts. I knit one, and then I'm like, I'm not going to be able to knit the second one. And I even went back, ripped out some of the first one to try to make it a little smaller.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I was done with it, when I weighed the yarn, I was like, nope, not going to have enough. And so now I have like two sets of mitts where I have like one mitt done and not enough yarn to finish the other one. And I'm like, I probably just need to like rip them all out and start over. So I guess that's sort of, you know, when you're knitting a hat out of leftover yarn, one, it's easier to just throw a random skein onto the top and finish it than to do that with one mitt. But two, you can always just decide to make the hat shorter and you can't really, you know, again, like on mitt number two, you don't want to make it a different size than mitt number one. So I don't know if knitting mitts is really my go-to for scraps because it's just like I keep doing this. And then what did I do? Oh, I just started the Honey Locust Loop, which has been on my to-knit list for a long time. It's a tube cowl that's done, that has a little bit of color work on it that's got like kind of a mosaic-y stripe and then like a falling leaf pattern. And then a lot of plain knit tube as well. And I'm doing that in Artisan Sock in Emerald City. And then the leaf color is going to be a skein of Entice I have in Sedge.
That's from Hazelnuts.
Hazelnuts. And then the contrast, the little stripe mosaic-y thing is I'm doing it in like a magenta, one of the little gumball skeins from Knitted Whip.
Mm-hmm.
Which is perfect for a project like this where you only need like, you know, 40 yards or something like that. So that's what I'm doing. Also, I've been spending a ton of time working on this scrappy quilt thing. The project's called Scrap Vortex, and it is so aptly named because I'll like start working on it and then I'll look up and it'll be like 3 hours later because it's so addictive because you're like, it's so perfect for me. You're just like throwing things together and then I'll throw two pieces together and go, whoo, because I like make a little pile of things to stitch together. And then there's always a pile on the go next to the sewing machine. And then, you know, once you stitch them all together, then you're really excited to run over and like press them and trim them and see how they look. And then you'll find another piece that fits together and then you're like, ooh, and then you're like excited to run back over to the sewing machine. So, and the pile next to the sewing machine never gets any smaller because, you know, you stitch all your bits together, take them back over, press them, trim them, find something else to match them up to, and then bring them back. So it's like, you're like, keep re-sewing the same pieces over and over again. They just keep getting bigger. So I've got some really big sections of it now.
How big of a quilt are you making?
I don't know.
You don't know?
Because I'm just like...
You're just going.
I'm just going. I was thinking, like, this is going to be really big. And then I actually laid it all out and measured it. And I think I only have enough right now for, like, a 3-foot square. But I have a lot... I mean, there's still a lot more to do. But I think I was hoping for something more of, like, a generous throw size.
Getting a square or a rectangle?
I prefer a rectangle. Generally, just because that seems more useful. People are longer than they are wide. I find square blankets a little
useless. Like a full size bed is basically square. It's like 80 something by 80 something, okay. And then queens are wider.
Yeah,
and longer. A
little bit. Yeah, I have no idea what I'm going to do. I mean, who knows when I'll ever finish? I mean, I'm just going to keep adding to it, and then I'll probably like run out of fabric scraps, and then I don't know what'll happen after that. anyway, but it's really fun. It's like, it's so brainless. It's just like the total kind of Jessica product of like just using all sorts of random weird bits and just throwing things together really higgledy-piggledy and like kind of getting pleasantly surprised when you like fold, you know, you press it and you fold it open and then you're like, ooh, that's cute. And then, you know, just sort of petting things and admiring the way all the colors and patterns are coming together. So, not for the planful person, for the kind of random weirdo like me. What are you up to? That was a long list.
Yeah. It's been a while. Yeah. I finished my Princess Twin Set Jumper by Susan Crawford, and I've been wearing it like at least once a week. It's a short sleeve pullover with a kind of a cable detail on the front yoke and a little split at the back neck that you button up. It's like vintage style. And I knit that out of Hazelnut's Lyric in the Silhouette color. And it's such a good weight of sweater for here because I am in an office that varies in temperature, but I can wear it most of the time without any problem. Like, I'm not too cold, not overheated, nothing. So it's really nice. And I'm like, oh, I want more very lightweight sweaters like that. So I'm planning those.
And it's short sleeve.
Yeah, short sleeve. I knit a pair of broken rib socks for charity. Nothing exciting. I finished Manor by Alicia Plummer.
Oh, yeah.
I used all that yarn up and I washed it, and it's going to charity this fall sometime. I knit a second Mount Pleasant tee by Pippin Pin, Megan Nodiger, I think. And I had decided that I was going to try a more positive piece, and I freaking hate it. It looks so terrible. Oh. So it's like I went one size up, which would be like 3 inches of positive piece. It's too much. Oh. It doesn't look good. So
because you wear that first one you made.
Oh, all the time. All the time. Yeah. I love it. So I'm going to pull it out and redo it in the size that I knit the other one, which is like 0 E's. So I'm always skeptical of like lots of positive E's patterns. I'm like, no. Yeah. I think if you're busty, they just make you look
like
much whiter.
Yeah.
And it's not flattering. No, so I agree. It's my personal opinion. I know lots of people love like huge boxy sweaters. I think you have to choose your E's very carefully for those.
Well, it's pretty short.
It's also cropped, but I think that even if it were longer, like a t-shirt length, I think it'd look like trash. Like I'm actually wearing a trash bag because I'm busty. So it'd just be like, put a pillowcase on and walk around kind of thing. Because there's no shape to it.
I agree. I it's not a style I like. Well, you and I are both very hourglassy too. So I think if you were busty, but you were also very straight up and down, it might not be as much of an issue. It's just when you actually are busty, but you still have a waist, it then makes you feel like you're really filled in through the middle.
Yeah. So it just made me look like this big block on top. Yeah, and I'm just crazy about really that don't either. Like it. So I'm going to pull it out. It's in red silky wool, like a nice maraschino cherry red, because the color is maraschino. So I'm going to pull it out and I'm going to re-knit it in the smaller size and I'll be much happier and it'll go faster because it's a smaller size. So, I mean, I only knit it in like 10 days or something. It's super fast. I knit 4 snap hats. That's a Tin Can Knits pattern where you like quadruple or triple yarn.
Oh, okay.
And you knit like, theirs are like knit and feeds. Oh, you can't see it. Here's like a green one I did.
Oh, yeah.
This one's almost dry.
So 4 strands of fingering weight?
Yeah, but I knit a couple that were like a sport weight with a couple of fingering weights. Mm-hmm. Just like whatever I had. Like I cleaned these jars up that have my leftovers.
Yeah.
This one has some Sundara Silky Merino. Mm-hmm. That's the julep color. Mm-hmm. So you just... And they go from baby through big head adult. So, which I could have figured that out on my own, but I didn't want to...
I was going to say, I kind of did something like that
a while
back where I just held 3 strands together of random fingering and stuff just to use it all up.
So those will also go to charity. Cute. And then that little green sweater is called Binnick by Solène Couillure. It's her C-O-U-I-X. Couillure? I'm not sure.
C-O-U-I-X.
Yeah.
Couillure.
Yeah. It's a free pattern. It's only in one size, which is like a toddler size. I knit it in 220 Sport in a green color. It's a pullover. It's got kind of a slash neck kind of envelope top and ribbing on the top. Yoke. And drop
mini stuff.
Yeah. Drop sleeve. That's pretty much it. And super simple. And you knit the body bottom up and then the sleeves top down.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
You could do stripes or whatever. Yeah. And it's a free pattern. So if you're looking for, and I think it's, well, the color I knit it in is more masculine, I think. You could do stripes or whatever you wanted with it. Mm-hmm. I just had some random skeins of sport. Another good boys pattern, which is a very similar shape. Mm-hmm. That one is called Sam, and it's by Amy Christophers. It's a Barocco free pattern through Barocco.
Oh, okay.
And it's a kind of similar shape, kind of square, no shaping, drop, shoulder. And it has a mistake rib that you do like a third of the way through the body maybe. Mm-hmm. And then the rest of the body is in mistake rib. It's on size 9 needles.
Ooh.
Cause it's written for Barocco Vintage Chunky, I think.
Oh.
But I used Imperial Stock Ranch.
Delicious.
what's that one?
Columbia.
Yes, that one. That I previously knit two different sweaters for myself in and ripped out.
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah, but I don't really wear Erin Waite sweaters. So I'm like, this will go to a kid. I knit the biggest size, and I used almost, I think, no, I had enough to knit a hat left over.
Oh, yeah.
So I knit that, which I didn't write down. Which I think the hat is Take Heart from Fiona by Fiona Alice, and it's from an older issue of Pom Pom magazine.
Oh.
And it's just little heart cables.
Oh, yeah.
Knit bottom up.
Fun.
Yeah. So that yarn is entirely gone. Ooh, that feels good.
Yeah. Because you didn't knit mitts with it.
Yeah. I knit a hat.
I've learned.
I knit a pair of slippers because now that it's summer, I need really heavy wool slippers. The pattern is Mine. Not Mine, it's an I wrote it, but the name of the pattern is Mine by Faye Kennington. Monica got me this, the red yarn. It's from Green Mountain Spinnery when she went back east and did like her back east trip and went to, what's that?
Rhinebeck
and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
She went also went to Green Mountain Spinnery and picked up a skein of, I'm not sure what it's called because I lost the label. But it's a bulky, chunky weight of mostly wool with some mohair in it.
So are those ones knit, like, in one piece and then you stitch up the sole?
Yeah. So okay. You do the cuff and garter stitch, and then you knit a few rows, and then you knit the top, like, the instep of the foot.
Mm-hmm.
And then do a couple of decreases to join it back in the round. Then you do garter, and then you do a three needle bind off or Kitchener, and a center sole.
Oh, okay.
But the pattern has, I just did stockinette on top, but there's also kind of a cable, twisted cable motif that, she has written out that you can do.
Fun.
So they were fast. It took me like 3 hours to knit the pair.
Yeah.
On size 10? 10 and a half. Something like that.
Something big.
Something big. Because they're chunky.
Yeah.
And I used all that up, too.
Yay.
It was nice. I'm going to put them away until it's cold enough to wear them. And then I knit that plain stripe hat in leftover Cascade 220. It's like an orange and navy Bronco colors, I guess. I'm not a short.
I was going to say, it's not quite that obnoxious an orange.
It's a heathered orange.
More of a rustier orange, so not, it doesn't look quite very sportsy.
Yeah, thanks. That's You're also welcome. Going to charity. I'm knitting on a pair of plain vanilla socks. This yarn is from 2008.
It is
a Rock and Sock Club yarn.
Oh, okay,
the one time I was in the Socks That Rock.
It's a really cute color.
It's called Tide Pooling.
Fun.
Here's the first one.
Yeah, it's like got like a little apple green and a little bit of what, like a slate.
Yeah.
And then like goes a little purpley.
And kind of a little bit of like maroon and rust color.
Yeah, like brown.
I'm knitting.
Very cute.
Yeah, thanks. It's my bust knitting usually. They're just plain vanilla socks cuffed down. I really like knitting with Socks That Rock.
Mm-hmm.
The lightweight is really nice. It's very bouncy for socks. I think it's a little bit heavier, too.
Yeah.
So it'll be nice and warm. Than the usual. And I'm almost done with Seaway by Stephen West. It's a hat from West Knits Volume 3. It takes one skein of Rowan Felted Tweed, the DK one. I had just a skein hanging out in green.
What does the pattern look like?
It's plain stockinette, and then it has like a twisted kind of cable motif in one section. And so you increase where the marker is for the round, and then you decrease on the side of the motif section so that
it biases
a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. That's simple. It's a lot of small projects.
Yeah.
And I started the Duane Park Triangle by Kristen Kapoor in Nano Stitch Lab Scientific Sock and Tosh Merino Light. That was last weekend. And you start at one corner or one triangle you know, on the side. Mm-hmm. And you increase out in one color, then you stripe, and then you have a sideways knit on border.
Oh, okay.
And a contrast color. And it's, there's two sizes, and they're both huge, so knitting the medium, it's like 76 or 81 wide and like 31 deep or 36 deep. So they're both really big.
That is really big.
I like it though.
Yeah. So is it just two skeins of sock yarn? Mm-hmm. Okay.
So the larger size, it takes, she says, if you should check gauge, which is why I'm knitting the medium. Then it uses like all of a 438 yard skein, and mm-hmm. I think I have a 460.
Oh, okay.
I'm pretty sure. I have more than enough for, but you know, gauge variation that I refuse to do for shawls. So there's that.
It's funny. You're such a diligent swatcher for sweaters.
I know. I could give a crap.
It's like a shawl. It's like, no. It's going to fit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't really swatch for socks. I don't really swatch for shawls. Yeah. But yeah, for sweaters, I'm on it.
Yeah.
And I am participating in the outfit along, which is already started June 1st, I think, which is you sew a garment and you knit a garment and they go together to make an outfit. I am knitting the official pattern. That's by Andy Satterland. She also hosts the outfit along in her Untangling Knots group on Ravelry. And the pattern's called Seaway. No, pattern is called Waters. Sorry. It's like, mixing up my notes.
I was going to say, you've got a lot of, like, Mariner-themed
it's
stuff.
It's true. I think I just realized that. It's called Waters, and it's a top-down, stripey, short-sleeve top with a deeper scoop back and stripes. Mm-hmm. And I'm knitting it in the yarn the pattern calls for. Which is weird.
Yeah.
Quince and Company Sparrow. And I'm using like a dark, the Marl, which I can't remember what it's called. Rill, I think. It's like super dark gray and a lighter gray Marl together.
Is that?
And then like an apple green.
Wool or linen?
It's linen. It's the fingering weight linen. Yeah. So it'll be good for summer.
Yeah.
And
then what are you sewing to go with it?
I already sewed a pair of jeans.
Oh, the polka dot ones?
Yeah, the polka dot ones.
Cool.
So, stripes and polka dots.
Perfect.
I sewed ginger jeans, and they're already high-waisted, but I raised the waist a couple inches, and I love them even more. and I cropped the length of it, so they're much more of a summer length. So, and then there's stretch denim from Stone Mountain and Daughter that I bought last year when I was down there in Berkeley, Oakland. I think it's like right on the border.
Oakland.
Yeah. That's it.
Cool.
So that's a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
A simple plug for the magazine, because starting July 1st through the month of July, we're offering 15% off of both the remaining issues, because the mild weather one's going to be pulled August 1st. So if you don't have that one and you want it, and there's no coupon code starting July 1st, you should just...
Stranded Magazine.
Yeah, Stranded Magazine. You should just... You can add it to your cart, and automatically 15% should be taken off the price for both the last issues available. And then they're gone forever.
Bye.
Forever. Bye. I was going to say I haven't been knitting that much, but I was just talking a lot. But I've been reading a lot, too. But why don't you go first? Oh.
I've read things. Actually, so I'm reading The Handmaid's Tale, which I've never read.
Oh, it's so good.
So my son had to read it for school, and he said, well, you've read it, right? And then I was like, no. I've read a lot of Margaret Atwood, but I think I always avoided that because, I probably mentioned this before, I generally avoid things that have themes around rape. I just... You know, it's not something I like to spend my leisure time on. Mm-hmm. But I'm
finally, other stuff happens in the book.
Yes. But, you know, sometimes that's, like, enough for me. Like, if I know, like, a book or a movie has that as a plot point, that mm-hmm. is enough to make me be like, you know, there's other stuff. So I'm finally reading it. It's actually available as a free Kindle book if you're a Prime member on Amazon. So I've just been... I never do this, but I've just been, like, reading it on my phone mostly. So what I'm only about halfway through it, but I mean, it's amazing. Yeah. I mean, I had no doubt.
I mean, it does deal with tough issues.
But it's, yeah, I mean, just even from the very first, it's so gripping. The style of the writing is so strong and potent, and it's just amazing. But then I've also been doing some audiobooks, which is not my usual thing.
That's new for you.
I know. Because of the sewing. You know, I'm so used to watching stuff while I knit, but then I was sewing and I was like, oh, what should I do? So I listened to The Song of Achilles by Madeline Miller. She's been getting I've been hearing a lot about her because she has a new book called Circe. But being me, I'm like, I'm going to go back and read her other book first. It is a retelling of the story of, the relationship between Achilles and Patroclus and the events leading, up to the Trojan War. There are, a lot of different interpretations of their relationship. I mean, different ways it's been portrayed in literature. Mm-hmm. I mean, even the way the Greeks portrayed it in literature. So, in the Iliad, Homer portrays them as friends, as comrades, but, other authors portray them as lovers. So this is a romantic interpretation of them from their boyhood and sort of fills in. So Patroclus is the narrator. So you're getting, his story very filled in ways that it's typically not in tellings, but so it's very interesting, and it kind of like stirred up. I used to be obsessed with Greek mythology when I was a kid, because weirdly my second grade class did a class play of the Iliad.
It's really weird.
I know, it's so strange. Like, we built Troy out of like giant wooden blocks. We did a whole presentation. I was Hecuba, queen of Troy. I was very jealous of my good friend who got to be Cassandra, you know, because I didn't have any powers, and Cassandra has the gift of sight.
She's a firebrand,
Yeah, anyway, it's just so weird. Like, it stirred up all these weird memories, and I was, like, trying to remember, like, who played Achilles and Patroclus, because I just remember it was, like, one of those things that, like, you know, because even in the Iliad, Achilles cries over the death of Patroclus, and that it was sort of like a thing that like, oh, like whoever it was who had to be Achilles is like, you gotta cry now. I don't know. That's just stirring up all these weird memories for me. But anyway, it was very good. I really liked it. I'm looking forward to reading Circe when I have time. But the next book I downloaded that I'm listening to right now is A Gentleman in Moscow, that was on like all the best lists from last year. It begins in 1918, where Count Alexander Ilyich Rostov is brought before some sort of Bolshevik tribunal, and essentially put under house arrest instead of being. And it's never clear like why they don't just execute him as an aristocrat who might have worked against the revolution. but instead he's put under house arrest, but his home is the Metropole Hotel in Moscow. Cause his family home was taken, by the government. So it's this very charming disarm. I mean, so you're going through Russian history of the 20th century with him, sort of as an observer, and he's not allowed to leave the hotel. So he's this permanent resident of the hotel, and sort of you're getting this view of all the changes and the comings and goings within the hotel and the relationships that he develops with the people there. And that he is sort of this almost mystically gentlemanly character who always knows the right thing to say and always has the perfect manners and the right thing to do. But it's really, charming and funny, and, you know, and also, there's sort of always these like storm clouds on the horizon of like, where is this going to end up? Because, anyway, I've been really enjoying it. And I like the narrator on it. as well. Just very, yeah, I don't know, just like extremely charming and just amusing. And, but it ties in, a lot of Russian literature, and it has a very interesting narrative voice to the narrator. Is will sometimes just start addressing the audience member and sort of pointing out like, well, we Russians do this thing or do that thing. And it's just a little different. It's, I'm just really, I'm enjoying it a lot. So that's been great. Yeah, that's what I've been reading. What have you been reading?
I read The Woman in the Window by A.J. Finn. It's a suspense thriller. It's about a woman who is agoraphobic, and she lives in this schmancy townhome in New York City, and she witnesses what she thinks is a murder across the park.
Hmm.
And then it's like the small cast of characters in her neighborhood who she knows all of them. The twist is that she is a psychiatrist. So she like self-diagnosed, like she know she has her own person that she talks, therapist she talks to, but she also belongs to this website called the Agora, which is a bunch of people who suffer from agoraphobia mm-hmm. to varying degrees. And she helps them through their problems. Yeah, she is stuck. And she also drinks a lot and like self-diagnoses or self-medicates with her pharmaceuticals that she's on and stuff. And then everything kind of becomes amplified when she thinks she sees what is a murder.
Mm.
There's some twists in there. It's really good. I read it in like 2 days.
Wow.
Okay. Fantastic.
Oh, cool.
And it's a newer book. It's in the Peak Picks. That's how I picked it up.
Oh.
But Abra recommended it to me because she knows how like suspense thriller things. Yeah. I read The Left Hand of Darkness by Ursula K. Le Guin, and I loved it. And I'm not a sci-fi person, mm-hmm. sci-fi or fantasy. It's about a planet called Winter, where everyone is androgynous. There's no male, female, except for a certain times of the month where one, like, because of hormonal fluctuations, mating can happen. So one of the people becomes a female and one becomes more masculine and they have children. So that's how they keep the race going. But it's like an envoy from this kind of planetary kind of Star Trek, so, you know, the Federation or whatever, to this one guy goes and he lives there and he's supposed to talk to them about like this Federation style thing where it's not really, they impose rules, but it's more about free trade. And so he is basically a male human and he's trying to figure this out, like how all the stuff works, and at the same time be, you know, a liaison and like get them to accept that there are other planets and stuff. But there's a lot of political intrigue between various areas of the planet, and he becomes friends with one of the higher up guys who then gets booted out of his area for treason. And so there's all this political intrigue on top of all this discussion of, like, race and sexuality and stuff. I just loved it. I thought it was so good. Apparently it's Noah's favorite Ursula K. Le Guin book. I think I've read one other of hers, but not this one. Mm-hmm. I thought it was really interesting. All the discussion about what it means to be male or female, mm-hmm. or neither, yeah. or both. And how their society is structured around that.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely recommend that. I read The Great Alone by Kristen Hanna. She's a Pacific Northwest author. And it's about a family in 1974. The father is a POW from Vietnam and had some issues. He convinces his wife and his daughter to move up to Alaska because he's been gifted some land from his army friend who died is a prisoner of war. And they go up to Alaska to be homesteaders, know nothing about it, which is scary.
Perfect.
And this tiny community, the dad has a PTSD, there's domestic abuse, and it's mainly about the daughter. She's like 13 or 14 when they move up there, and she really becomes like an Alaskan, and really, like, she loves Alaska. So it's like family drama, homesteading. I thought it was great. It was really good. Hard to read though, because of the abuse things. Yeah. And there's also this like paramilitary survivalist compound.
Yeah.
I think there always are. Right. There's always one of those in those situations. Like the homesteading back to the land kind of thing. I read a book I didn't like, Universal Harvester by John Darnielle. John Darnielle's the singer-songwriter for the Mountain Goats, and apparently has another book that's really good. But this I really just liked. The premise is cool. The premise is that this kid in, I think, Nebraska? The town's name is Nevada, but it's not an actual Nevada. I believe it's Nebraska. He works at a video rental store, and there's still VHS. So it's, I would say,
in the olden days.
In the olden days, I'd say it was probably like the late 80s or early 90s. Yeah. And people are bringing these tapes in saying, hey, there's weird stuff on here. And someone has taped over the VHS tapes in chunks, like kind of disturb, nothing violent, but just like weirdly disturbing scenes. Sometimes it's just like a room for 2 minutes and then that's it. And I was like, oh, this sounds cool. Kind of creepy, something I would like, but anytime any forward momentum, so the kid then wants to figure out what's going on,
yeah,
and he's disturbed by it, and he, like, kind of teams up with this other woman, and they're trying to figure it out, but anytime any forward momentum happens, it's, like, kind of cut off, so you, like, get going, and then it stops, and then the whole weird, creepy VHS thing just falls away completely, and I'm like, that's what hooked me into the book.
Oh.
That, there's no... That's what I'm here for.
I'm here for the creepy.
I am here for the creepy. And then it kind of morphs into talking around, not telling the story directly, but telling the story around what I think is a cult, which also I would be down for that if they address that directly. Like those two things. Hell yes.
Yeah.
That one of the people that is not really in the story, she's kind of tangentially in the story. Mm-hmm. She is and she isn't in the story. Like, her mother joined this cult of, like, garbage, roving garbage eaters. But there's, like, an actual cult called the Brethren of something or other. Universal Church of Brethren. That was an actual thing in the 70s where they recruited college kids. And they dressed like in cast off clothes and they ate out of garbage cans and they were like end timer kind of people. So I think it's based, the cult kind of aspect is kind of based on that, but it's not ever addressed directly. Like, that's what this is actually about. Or it's about these videotapes. Like, I just didn't like it. And I like experimental fiction, but it just made me angry. And I felt like I wasted time reading it.
Unsatisfied.
But some people, I was reading reviews online after, I'm like, what the hell? When I finished it, some people were like, oh, you just don't get it. I'm like, I think I got it and I didn't like it. So, yeah. I cannot recommend that. Mm. I mean, the videotape thing, like, that's cool, but the way it was done, I didn't like it. But someone said that, like, his other book is really good, so I don't know. We'll see. And I'm reading Salem's Lot by Stephen King most of the way through, because that's creepy.
Have you ever read it before?
I have not.
Oh.
I am not a Stephen King fan in general.
Oh, that's...
I've read The Shining. I've read Carrie. I think that's it, because I've started a lot of his books and I get annoyed because they think they're not well edited and they're too long.
They're worried. Yeah.
And even in this, it's like 700 pages or something. Like, this could be edited down. There's like all these short little chapters. I'm like, this doesn't have anything to do with like the core story.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but I'm enjoying it. Okay. You know, creepy stuff. Yeah. Like, addressed directly. Creepy stuff. I know exactly what's happening.
Yeah.
So.
Let's see. I've been watching a lot of stand-up.
That's weird.
I know. Not my usual thing, but I watched Hari Kondabolu has a special on Netflix, and Wes had seen his stand-up before, and that was really good. And then I was like, and then when that ended, it was like, oh, do you want to see this new one from Tig Notaro? I'm like, yes, I do. I like Tig Notaro. So I watched that, and then it was like, oh, Michelle Wolf has a new special. So I watched that. And then there's a Mike Birbiglia one. So I watched that. I love Mike Birbiglia. And then there was a Hannibal Buress one and I watched that. So those are all really, those are all comedians that I really enjoy. Michelle Wolf also now has a weekly show, on Netflix. What the heck is it called? The Break, I think. Which again, like, I think she's really funny. I like her. So I've been enjoying that. I watched season 2 of Dear White People, which I didn't like quite as much as the first season, but I still really enjoy it. I just think it's a very thoughtful, well-written series, and still really liking that. Watched Evil Genius, which I know you watched, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so documentary on Netflix about what people refer to as like the pizza bomber, that there was a case in Erie, Pennsylvania. No, I can't remember how long ago it was. What, like 10, 15 years ago?
Yeah.
Of a pizza delivery guy who walked into a bank with a bomb strapped around his neck, claiming that he had gone to deliver a pizza and had this bomb put on him and was being sent to rob this bank. Which I remember when that happened. I remember the news story about it, but what I didn't know is all the stuff that happened after it,
mm-hmm.
and that it was tied to other murders, and it was tied, and it's just this crazy story.
And all those people are kooky and weird and, like, crazy.
It's bizarre.
They all have a lot of issues. I mean, they definitely all have, I'm not using crazy as, like, a mental term, but just, like, they do weird things, but some of them do have mental issues, yeah. For sure.
It's just bizarre. And what's weird though, is that the initial event made national news because it was so crazy. I mean, you know, it was just this really bold bank robbery thing.
But it was all caught on tape too.
Yeah.
Because cameras were there.
But then all this other stuff happened afterwards with murders and all this other stuff that I've never heard about. Mm-hmm. And I was like, why didn't this make the news? Like, it's just so
strange.
Because
it wasn't somebody being blown up.
I guess so, but it's very interesting if you like crime stuff. Interesting. I watched, there's an HBO movie, or HBO, no, Netflix movie called Ibiza, or however you want to pronounce it, that stars Gillian Jacobs, who I generally like, and this was garbage. It was one of these ones where I'm like, it's going to subvert the usual Girls Gone Wild narrative. No, it's garbage. skip. Watched a documentary. It's called Bombshell. It's about Hedy Lamarr. I had read a biography on her many years ago where, and this documentary sort of presents both either a case for or against whether or not she actually invented, not invented the technology, but came up with the ideas and partnered with someone to create the idea of signal hopping for wireless to create secure wireless communication, which was her goal was to improve torpedo technology to win the war against the Germans during World War II. But the technology that her name is tied to is now used for all sorts of wireless technology, including Bluetooth and all the wireless things that we do all the time. So, but it was, it's very sad though, because her life is, yeah, she wasn't recognized for these contributions that she may have made. And she was very much stuck in the trap of being, just being judged on being decorative and not, and she had, I think she was married 5 times. So just a very unhappy life. She didn't go very, delicately into her older age, experimented extensively with plastic surgery. And, so in the end it was really kind of sad, and it wasn't, that like, so, and they did present like someone of the opinion of like, she didn't actually invent anything. Maybe she had this little idea or whatever, or she got plagiarized this idea or, so, but I mean, other people feel very strongly that it, that there is evidence that she came up with this concept that led to all this other technology. Yeah, so it was interesting. I didn't feel like there was a ton that was new other than, but the one new thing though is that there's extensive audio interview footage, or footage, audio interview, recordings, that she'd done. So you get a lot of her telling her version of her life.
Cool.
And it's just woven in with other things, but, yeah, that was kind of interesting. And then let's see. Oh, and then we went to go see The Incredibles 2 at the theater. It's really cute. I don't think it's like the greatest, but it was fun to see. I really loved the short that came before it called Bao, which is the first Pixar short directed by an Asian woman. I've seen a lot of surprisingly negative stuff online about it, which, is sad to me. But I know for like, for my family, I mean, you know, we went with our youngest son who's 18, and it's the first time he felt like he saw something, you know, at the movies that felt like, this looks like my family. Mm-hmm. And that's crazy, you know, to be 18 in America and still have it be that rare an event. So, but I thought it was really, anyway, but The Incredibles is really, it's funny. I mean, they definitely go just for kind of silly adventure stuff. And that's where I think it does its best, is just when it's trying to be really silly and having a lot of fun with Jack-Jack and all of his powers now. Yeah, but still a fun afternoon at the movies.
I'm going to start with the messed up stuff I watch and then ease into the fun stuff at the end.
Oh, and The Staircase, too. Yeah. I watched that also.
Oh, yeah. Did you watch it originally?
I had seen the original, yeah. And then I just watched the last 3 episodes. So The Staircase is a documentary about a man who was convicted in the death of his wife.
Mm-hmm.
He claims she fell down the staircase.
There's all kinds of crazy theories.
Prosecutors claim she was murdered. It was blunt force trauma, or she was beaten around the head. And but so there's 3 new episodes now because he was, well, not exonerated, but his first initial verdict was voided. And he was released and about to be retried for the case.
So he was working on deals and stuff.
And the case was voided because it turns out that people on the prosecution team lied. Like, just fabricated things or withheld evidence. Well, what did you think?
I mean, I do feel like it was biased in favor of the defendant. Just the filmmaking portion of it was definitely, and I felt that way about the original episodes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I do feel like there's reasonable doubt about what happened, because the blood spatter guy who originally brought the stuff, and those experts were definitely shady. I just feel bad for the family, like, on both sides, because it was a big family, and it was, like, adopted kids and other kids.
Her kid from a previous relationship, his kids.
It's a blended family.
Her sister.
I just feel bad for everyone.
Everyone involved, yeah. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, someone is dead.
Yeah.
Possibly through violence, and it's just...
my upstairs neighbors are being really loud, so hopefully you can't hear that much of it.
I thought it was interesting that, you know, they include this very impassioned speech from the Kathleen's sister at the end, who completely tears apart the film that she's now appearing.
But apparently they didn't ask her for her... I mean, it seems
they
like
don't they don't have to. I mean, it was like it was new. She was speaking in open court. She didn't participate in the original part of the documentary. So the only footage of her is when she is speaking in public, either in like television interviews or like, speaking in court.
Also, I don't know if they asked her to ask any of the other family to be part of it, like the dissent, the people who did not agree with the overturning or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know. So that they don't address that at all, but I definitely feel like it was biased.
Yeah.
I also feel that there's reasonable doubt. So, you know, whatever.
Yeah. It's very,
he seems like he was not conducting himself as a very good husband in the first place. So, but you know, we'll never know.
No, we won't.
So,
I didn't feel like it was, I started watching it and I was just really surprised just how, because I felt like in the original episodes, it was biased, but still presenting the case in such a way that they were like, yeah, he probably murdered his wife, but let's give him the, give him the benefit of the doubt. Let's wait to actually, like, prove him guilty. This felt a lot more like, let's look at all the ways the justice system sucks. And, I mean, and certainly there are ways in which, I mean, that's kind of the terrible thing about it, is that the reason his conviction was voided was because prosecutors conducted themselves in really unreasonable, I mean, illegal ways. And that's just terrible.
I think also my feeling, I'm listening to this podcast called In the Dark, where very similar, it's not a similar story, but the DA is conducting himself in a manner that it's very similar. As far as the lying, there's also racial bias in the podcast that I'm listening to. Like, hugely apparent. So, I don't know. It was okay. I wanted to watch the new episodes just to see what was happening. But I don't feel like...
I don't feel like it was very illuminating. It was maybe a little more illuminating about
the
documentarians.
The documentarians and, like, how that part of the justice system works.
Yeah.
How deals work. Or doesn't work, yeah.
Yeah.
So I watched that. I watched a movie called Bomb City, which is based on a true story. It takes place in Amarillo, Texas, which is, that's where all the nuclear warheads are stored. So that's called, it's called Bomb City. And it takes place in 1997 or 98. And I remember this being in the news. Basically, there was like this punk community and this jock community, and they were having escalating bouts of violence toward each other. The punks, the cops, were unduly harsh when it came to the punk contingent, but because the jocks were the golden boys, they were let off really easy. It kind of flared one night after a series of, you know, battle kind of things happen. There's this huge fight, and one of the jock kids purposefully ran over this kid named Brian Denneke, who was in a band and was trying to start this like music venue and stuff in Amarillo. He murdered him with his car, and then he was let off with 10 years probation. Even though there were people in the car with him who were like, yes, he did it, and he meant to do it. Basically, because the kid was a jock and a golden boy, he got early light sentence. So it's super depressing.
Thank goodness that never happens anymore.
Thank goodness. Because I remember, because the kid who died was only a couple years older than me.
Oh.
And I was in my small town, like our music community, and everyone was just appalled that that could happen. So it's a really good movie, but it's really depressing, and based on a true story. So,
It's not a documentary.
It's an indie film.
Based on those events. Okay.
But I feel like it definitely is on the side of the punks.
Yeah.
I feel like as it should be, but it's depressing. On the creepier side of things, I went and saw Hereditary, which freaked me out. So freaky. Toni Collette is amazing, and I love her. She's so good. It's the story of a family. Toni Collette and her husband is Gabriel Byrne, I think. Is that right?
I don't remember.
They have two kids. They have a teenage son and a younger teenage daughter. And it starts with Toni Collette. Her mother has died. So it starts with a funeral. And she's kind of giving this speech. She's obviously has some issues with her mother. And then she's going to this grief group and she's talking about issues with her mom and then like mental health issues. She also had a brother who committed suicide. So there's like this setup of mental health issues. Mm-hmm. And then like the younger daughter dies in a really horrific way, which I'm like, that could totally happen in real life. And that's what freaked me out about it. Mm-hmm. But also there's a supernatural aspect too. But you also don't know if Toni Collette is just losing her mind or if things are actually happening and like that, and things just like start kind of bad and just worse. Also, the end is like really disgusting.
Well, so my older son went to go see it, and the first thing he said was, "You don't want to see this." But
it made me so tense watching it.
Like, I mean, I know you love horror movies and I know that you thought it was really disturbing and he is like the most unflappable person ever. And he was like, it's really disgusting. Like he felt like he was covering his face and he never does that in a movie. Yeah. He thought it was really well done, but incredibly gross and disturbing.
I mean, I just had my hand over my mouth, like, you know, hand over the mouth. And that's, I don't do stuff like it. Most of it doesn't bother me, I feel like.
Yeah.
Especially when it's like, I know that it's going to be a horror movie. Incredibly well done. I actually really liked it. But I don't feel like I ever need to watch it again.
Yeah. I will not be watching it.
Yeah. But it's A24 Studios. They are on the more art indie kind of side of things. They did Green Room, they did Lady Bird, they did, like, they do, like, kind of different things.
Yeah.
I feel like this kind of followed in the same vein, but, yeah. Ooh. I did, like, I went to, like a 7:30 showing, and I got home, like, I don't know, after 10:30, and I was like, it's late, but I can go to bed right away. Oh. And just, like, stay up and watch cartoons for a little bit so I can go to bed. Have nightmares.
Oh
yeah. I mean, it was
funny. Okay, if that's how you felt about it, I'm definitely never watching that.
Yeah, because no, it's like you went to bed late. I was like, that movie freaked me out. To stay up for a little bit and watch other stuff.
Oh.
I'm watching season 2 of Riverdale, which is kind of garbage.
I can't even finish the first one. It is really garbagey.
And I watched Coco, which is really good.
Oh, it's so good
because it's on Netflix now.
Yeah.
Especially in the current political climate, because it's all about, like,
borders and keeping and families family. Together.
Yeah.
I know. It's, like, it's so on the, it's, like, so prescient.
Yeah.
Also, Thor Ragnarok's on Netflix. And I was like, I'm just going to watch the first couple. I've totally rewatched the whole thing. So, I still really like it.
It's funny.
So funny.
I watched it with Noah. He had started watching it, and I came home from Friday night knitting. And I was like, he's like, I know you've seen this. Do you want me to turn it off? I'm like, hell no. Watch this a third time with you.
Yes.
It's so funny.
Yeah, and Kate Blanchett. I love. Oh, that, I could just watch that one forever. That one's great.
And finally, on Hulu, Daria. All of Daria is now on Hulu.
Oh,
And apparently there's going to be a reboot.
I heard there was going to be a reboot. I don't know.
Yeah, so now if you have Hulu, you can watch all of Daria, which I've been doing because they're like 20 minutes long.
I love Daria.
Yeah.
That's one of the quotes in our family all the time of, what's that word? Moronic. I think you mean ironic. No, she was right the first time. Oh,
that's God, funny. My coworker that I've been watching, and she's like, well, she's like you.
I know. It's like you've got the hair and the glasses, too.
That was my, like, long-term goal, just, like, over the years, I've made myself into Daria.
Well, this is, like, my one moment in my life where I'm like, maybe I like Katy Perry, that apparently, like, she's really into doing, like, these elaborate Halloween costumes, mm-hmm. and at this point, it's probably, like, 5 years ago, she and some other starlet, who I don't even know who it was, went as Daria and Jane, and they did, like, the most perfect Daria and Jane costumes, and I was like, damn it, Katy Perry, don't make me do things that make me like you. I don't like you.
Yeah.
I love Daria. Like, that's awesome.
On my list of stuff that, like, bummed me out and also terrible, Daria.
Yay!
I thought we would end on that because
that is
good.
Awesome. Perfect.
Yeah.
Alright, well, catch up with us. Show notes at doublenet.net. Mm-hmm. Or join us on our Ravelry group at Double Knit Podcast Fans. And we will talk to you soon.
Goodbye.
Bye.